Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Today, I have my good buddy from Pernod Ricard, brand ambassador, and Louise Marquis. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Before we get into this, I do want to say that it is extremely hot out today, and there's nothing I like more than drinking absinthe on a hot day like today.
It's perfect weather.
A lot of people don't think about absinthe, is something that you would drink on a sweaty day, but, you know, if you do it the right way, it's extremely refreshing.
Absolutely. Traditionally, that's when people had absinthe, was that kind of at the end of the day, right at sunset, as kind of cool off and get ready for the evening. So it's kind of a perfect thing to have right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially, you know, if you want to, you know, trip out. Not really. So what's the deal with that? I mean, like, I know, especially after, you know, the last 5-6 years of having absinthe in the market and kind of like re-legalized and brought in, are there still people out there that think I feel like there are still people out there that think that it's something that is like a hallucinogen
I would say most people still think that? It's hallucinogenic, and I think it's very sweet because I think they want to think that, and they're very reticent to give up that imagining of it, but it's not hallucinogenic. It never has been. The chemical in absinthe that everyone kind of freaks out about is a chemical called thujone, mm-hmm. and that's the chemical they thought was hallucinogenic, but it's actually not. It would actually give you seizures if you had it in high enough quantities to
right.
But in absinthe as it is now and as it was 100 years ago, the levels of thujone are so low that it would never hurt you.
Right, but that's also due to it actually being distilled after it's been infused, right? Because, like, so the thing about the thujone is that, you know, a lot of people were, and you could still, like if you read, like, High Times magazine, I don't, but I know that people out there do, you know, in the back of it, there's, like, make your own absinthe kits, and it's really, it's just, like a bag full of the botanicals that go into, like, traditionally go into absinthe, but really what you're doing is just infusing, like, vodka with these different herbs.
Right.
And so back in the day, I guess what I understand of it is that people were making this homemade absinthe without distilling it, and basically had all these like poisonous botanicals that would make you, I mean, like most poisons will do, they will make you trip out.
So there's two things to say about that. So one is that absinthe is a double proof spirit. So if you're drinking double proof spirit and not really pacing yourself, you are going to see things, right? Eventually,
you say pacing yourself or pissing yourself.
I think, you know, people, there was a culture where people were drinking nonstop. I mean, they were chain smoking and chain drinking, and that's all they did all day was drink absinthe. So they weren't realizing how strong it was. The other thing to say is that when absinthe was very popular in France 100 years ago, there were a lot of knockoffs. So people were making absinthe with things like turpentine. They were putting in chemicals that, you know, weren't good for you and that would obviously make you sick and maybe cause you to see things. So those are the two reasons. I mean, now the plants you put in absinthe, you can they're in everything else. I mean, they're in chartreuse, they're in
vermouth.
I mean, yeah. So and no one's complaining about those.
Right. Yeah, and I guess also there, I don't know. I feel like especially, you know, like you were saying, like overproof spirits, which, you know, traditionally you're gonna water down. Like that's part of the ritual of preparing pasties or absinthe, you know, it always involves a lot of water, you know, and it should. But if you're just drinking straight, and I know people who will come into my bar sometimes and like ask for, you know, an absinthe, then, you know, I'll put the water next to it and like they just don't like, you know, if someone's asking for it, I always assume that they're going to put the water in it because they know what they're doing. But then you'll just see people sipping on straight absinthe and it's like, that's gnarly, bro.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd do that. I think the point of absinthe is that you have to add water to release the flavor. Yeah, so if you're drinking it to enjoy it, I mean, if you just want to get really drunk really fast, it's a really good thing to do it with. But especially at a beautiful bar like yours, I don't think that's the intention.
I don't know. When was the last time you were there? People get down.
That's true. But hopefully in style.
Those bathrooms are small, but I've seen some crazy things happen. So I feel like another thing about absinthe, not just absinthe, but any kind of herbal liqueur or, Amari or Fernet, things like that, mm-hmm. I feel like your body kind of accepts those a little bit easier than, say, something like whiskey that's got a lot of congeners from like distillation and from the extract from the wood. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I eat twigs, you know, when you're desperate. But I mean, like, I feel like whiskey kind of like your body is like, all right, I should stop drinking this at some point because it's kind of slightly unnatural. You know, the grains that were distilled to make this, that's fine. But, you know, this whole wood extract is kind of like telling me I should stop. But with herbal liqueurs and Amari and Fernet and things like that, it's like your body's like, oh, these are things that these are acceptable. So you kind of just, does that make any sense to you?
Well, yeah. So traditionally, absinthe and like a lot of the spirits you just said, like a lot of those spirits started out as medicine.
Right.
And they started out as palliative. So it was like, you know, your stomach hurt at the end of a meal. You wanted to like, you know, settle your stomach a little bit, digest, and then you'd have an absinthe or you'd have an Amari. So there's definitely a sense that when you drink it, it's not as kind of counter, like you're saying, like you're not drinking wood out of whiskey, but it also just absinthe has a way of sneaking up on you in a way, sure. Because it seems so subtle and so delicate, and then all of a sudden you feel like you're floating and you don't quite know how you got there.
I never ever dance, but I've definitely caught myself in a whirling spin at many Bastille days due to pasties and absinthe.
Yeah, you're drinking it slower. You're drinking it for longer. You're always in a good mood. It's not necessarily
real good mood. Real bad
convivial
dancing.
Yeah, I mean, there's always music. There's always people out. It's always something you want to share with someone else. It's definitely something to be shared amongst friends and drunk with friends. It's not something you sit at home necessarily. I mean, you can, but traditionally, it's something that's had during celebrations.
Totally. Well, let's on that note, let's talk about the hardware that's involved. Because one of my things, I love like bar tools and any kind of like trinket. I love little trinkets and rituals involved with not only different drinks, but also cooking and you know things like that of that nature. And you know, especially when they're really pretty tools, I like that too. Run us through some of the, I mean, like there's like the fountain.
So I knew that about you because, I notice all your jewelry and all the things you wear and you like to decorate. Right? Mostly tattoos and some really beautiful things that Damon likes to wear. So I was thinking of you at the office. So I packed you some presents. Traditionally, you want to drink absinthe if you're out at a pretty restaurant, somewhere you go, like Maison Premier or the Dead Rabbit, somewhere that has a fountain and has these accoutrements, you would drink it, you would start it with a fountain. So you'd put about an ounce and a half of absinthe in the bottom of a glass, and then you would drip water from this fountain through a sugar cube that's sitting on a slotted spoon on your glass, and then it would it kind of dissolves the sugar into the absinthe and becomes your drink.
So you've already got an awesome huge fountain with you know, up to sometimes like 6-8 spigots coming off of it, with ice cold water in there, which actually it's better to have the cold water because it actually breaks up the chemicals better, right?
You want to have, I mean, I like cold water because I think cold water is better to drink. You don't want it super cold because then the anethol doesn't break out, so according to Dale DeGroff, you want to have it not too icy cold. I prefer it pretty cold because I think I tend to drink it on hotter days.
Yeah.
So you want to add those spigots, and you can get 6 of them going at a time. So you have these really beautiful, and there's this beautiful like old vintage fountains you can see. And one of the reasons I love my job is all the cool stuff that goes with it.
Totally.
So you have a fountain, and that's great. And then there's all these beautiful spoons you can use. Some really great ones from like 100 years ago, you can find really beautiful old spoons. And then we also have these things called balanciers.
Yeah. These are like one of my favorite little accoutrements.
So you can't see it, but maybe you can hear it. So that's the noise of the water going through. It's like a little cup that sits on top of your glass. And instead of a fountain, you just pour the water into this cup and then it drips out.
So this is the like single serving kind of accoutrement.
So that's what you'd have, yeah, if you were just by yourself at the bar, you know, or having one a one-off.
But this particular device does not incorporate a sugar cube, right?
It doesn't. I personally think our absinthe is totally sweet without adding sugar. I think when
like you're sweet isn't awesome or sweet isn't like.
I think it's radical and it's, you know, it's both. I think when you're first having absinthe, if you've never had absinthe, you should try it with a sugar cube first. But I think for people like you and I with kind of bartender's palates, it's plenty sweet by itself.
See, I always thought that, you know, especially when, you know, like about, you know, 10 years ago or so before absinthe was brought back into this market, a lot of the absinthe that people would bring back from the Czech Republic would be really gritty. A lot of them are pretty rough. So to me, I was kind of like thought that I made the connection of like the sugar cube being for kind of like inferior absinthe.
I mean, you can make that argument. I think wormwood is very bitter. So the base elements in it are bitter, and they've always been that way. I think the French traditionally, originally the absinthe was used for the army because they believed it was an anti-malarial and it would distill water, which it didn't do either of those things, but they thought it did. They would give it to the army when they were invading Tunisia. And one of the ways to get them to drink it was they would add the sugar to it to like make it a little more palatable. And I think that tradition stayed. And it's really beautiful to watch the sugar melt in. But on the Czech Republic note, that's absolutely something that they pushed when the Czech Republic absinthe came out, because they were making very harsh, basically neutral grain, like overproof neutral grain spirits with like food coloring and some flavoring. And that's the reason they started because their absinthe doesn't louche, so it doesn't have that pretty color change. Mm-hmm. And so that's why they started lighting it on fire. Yeah. So lighting absinthe on fire didn't start till the 1990s.
Yeah, and you know, I hate it when people do that. Honestly, I know. I'm sorry. I mean, I like lighting booze on fire as much as the next, you know, drunken Oaky. But I mean, like, I just think that it's kind of like counterintuitive for like, you know, doing like a nice, like cool, refreshing drink. And you know, I mean, maybe it does burn off some of the impurities from the Czech absinthe. You know, like it. But I can't remember the last time or if I've ever even done the sugar cube on fire for that. On that note, so like a lot of people still like, and I've realized this like kind of later on in my life, you know, as I'm approaching, you know, 46 or however old I feel right now, but sugar is something that a lot of people like, especially the American market, the consumer, when they go out to bars, you know, it's kind of an inside joke with bartenders, you know, like, not too sweet, bro. You know, like when people say, yeah, give me, I want a Manhattan not too sweet. It's like, so you just basically what you're saying is you want just whiskey with some bitters, you know, like, I don't know. But sugar is such an essential part of opening up other flavors and bringing it together. It's kind of like salt is another, they're palate stimulators. And, you know, you also have to think about like the body of a cocktail and, you know, especially with something as simple as an absinthe with water and a little bit of sugar, it really does open up. First of all, the water is opening up the absinthe, but the sugar does something in your palate that opens mm-hmm. up your palate for it.
You Absolutely. Know? And then you're more ready for it. Like, that's why I definitely suggest it for people that don't maybe drink as much as you and I do, whose palates aren't as like destroyed, or mine at least, from absinthe.
I've had 5 absinthes since we started the show today.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I think sugar is an incredibly vital part of cocktails, and I get so annoyed when people ask for, you know, no sweetener or no sugar, because it just, then you don't get to taste anything else that's in the drink.
But I think we've just been used to overly sugared drinks, right?
Right.
For so long.
Of course, but I think we can still have sugar and not drink so much of it.
I think it's like across the board, it's a very important, well, first of all, the term cocktail, the definition is sugar, water, bitters, and alcohol. So it's like, if you take the sugar out, then you
don't have a cocktail anymore.
Have a cocktail. But, but it's the same thing with like, you know, say like a daiquiri. You know, rum and lime go really well together. But, you know, if you're just having rum and lime, it, I mean, it's going to be awesome. I'm going to dig it. But it's always better with a little bit of sugar.
Yeah, I don't know if I would dig it without a little sugar. I had my friend had a margarita without the sugar the other day, and I did not like it.
Everything's better with a little sugar. All right. Let's take a break, and let's pour some absinthe. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit more with Anne-Louise Marquis from Pernod Absinthe.
The following is an actor reading an actual customer email from Heritage Foods USA.
My family and I enjoyed the Heritage turkey. It was far superior to the regular mass-produced turkeys in terms of flavor and texture. Absolutely delicious and worth the difference in price. We will never go back to the regular turkeys. It made our holidays more enjoyable. Thank you, Heritage Foods USA.
Heritage Foods USA hopes you had a great holiday season. For more specials on pork, beef, and other meats, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. And some sweet jams in the background also. That's nice. That's thanks to our producer, Dietrich. Thank you for doing that. So, we're talking with Anne-Louise Marquis from Pernod Ricard. And we've been talking about absinthe in general. And, you know, the different rituals in preparing it and enjoying it. And so we're going to have some right now. I don't think it's too early. I think it's perfect.
It's always time for an absinthe.
Yeah, totally. So why don't you walk us through what you're doing right now, like as far as this preparation, which is our style of preparation, right?
We're going to do a more rustic style right now. So we're not going to do the sugar cube, but we're going to... So I've just poured some absinthe. So what you're tasting right now is actually the... So it's the original formula. So it's actually... This has not been released yet in the U.S., but you're one of the first people. And this is the first radio interview to taste this absinthe.
You hear that, world? So
you just added some, you add some ice cold water to the absinthe. You just drip it in a few drops at a time, and you're going to notice how the color starts to shift. So you're going to see the oil start to swirl in there. And you just keep adding the water until it turns like a pretty milky, opaque, white color. And that's how you know that everything's fallen out of solution and that your drink is ready to drink. Yeah.
You know, there was something I wanted to ask about too. Okay, so you know, obviously, or not obviously for everyone, but you know, absinthe is often known as the green fairy. Mm-hmm. But there are different colors of absinthe, and what's that all about?
Okay, so there's a few things. So typically, absinthe is divided between green and white. So green comes from France, and white comes from Switzerland, typically. So it's made exactly the same way, except the last step, when they infuse the herbs into it, we add green nettles that turn it that beautiful green color. That's the only difference, really. I mean, the flavor gets affected a little bit, but the nettles are pretty neutral.
Thanks.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen it in like pink and red and blue, and you know, everyone knows I'm a huge fan of blue curacao. So, I mean, I've definitely had one of the first absinthes I ever had in my life was blue. And I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world. In fact, blue curacao was the first thing I ever saw in a cocktail book when I was like just a wee one. And I was like, this is what I need to do. This is my calling. I can make things blue? What?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting when you find that out.
And contrary to popular belief, blue curacao does not indicate its mood. It's actually the color.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
I thought it was sad curacao.
Nope. It's very happy, actually. But, all right, that was dumb.
It was so amazing. I just see this, like, this little blue curacao bottle being so, like, sad, so sad, like, dusty on the shelf.
Well, that's,
like,
it kind of is.
Yeah, it's a blue curacao.
It's so blue. Jesus, can't be more blue. yeah, this is amazing, actually. So this is a new formulation. This is really great. You know, it's actually, I feel like it's a lot smoother than the previous formulation.
Yeah. So it's, I think it's a lot smoother. I think it's a lot, I think our current, what's on market right now is fantastic, but it's very strong and it kind of punches you. It's a double proof spirit. It's very intense. It's very hot. I think this is a lot more delicate. It's more nuanced. And I was thinking it's because we're changing the base from a grain neutral spirit to a grape neutral spirit.
Yeah.
So that affects it a little bit. But more than that, it's the wormwood that we're using is actually grown in Pontellier now, which is the ancestral home of absinthe since the beginning. I mean, Pernod Absinthe created absinthe. The Pernod family created it in Pontellier. So they went back to their roots and they bought land in the same town and they're growing wormwood now, which I think is actually what creates that mellow flavor.
Yeah, you know, and I really like the grape base too. I mean, I love eau de vie. Actually, last night I was drinking some Marc de Bourgogne and some Fine de Bourgogne, and I'm really glad that I decided to do that at work before I came here today. So I'd actually have it like fresh on my palate.
Nice.
You could probably smell it on me right now. I took a shower, but I mean, this stuff's strong. Okay, so.
So yeah, so the other difference in this, just to round out the what's so exciting about this product, is that we've taken out all the artificial dyes. So when absinthe first came out in 2007, people didn't quite know how to make it yet. We were still figuring it out, and we added some green dye to stabilize the color and add consistency. Like Maker's Mark does it. Lots of brands. I mean, maybe not Maker's Mark. I know lots of brands do it. I don't want to name anyone specifically. Redact that. I know several brands. Add coloring. You know, just to, yeah. So and we did that, and we admit to that, and it was on our bottles. And it was a point of something that we wanted to fix. And so now all our products are 100% naturally colored.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, it's so good. I'm really psyched about this. I'm glad that I'm the first person to get to taste this. Man. Sure. Yeah. Take that, Maxwell Britton. Or maybe he's probably tasted it, right?
He's tasted it.
Okay. I'll take that back.
Yeah. We've had it for a year. I've been tasting, kind of doing the secret, like with a few people. But now we're launching in October and it's official and I can talk to you about it.
Awesome.
And all your listeners.
Can we take a sidebar real quick?
Yeah, totally.
I've heard through the grapevine that you went to circus school.
Oh my God. I did. That's how I got my job.
Really?
Yeah. Do you think they just like hire like girls to be brand ambassadors? No, you have to like do something weird. So
how did this happen? Like, what was this like?
Well, it was like a mid-20s crisis. And I wanted to be an actress. I was living in LA and I felt like I wasn't going anywhere. And I wanted to find some new way to challenge myself because acting school, like I'd gone to my last audition and the guy was like, you should go to acting school. And I literally just spent 3 years and like actually like the last decade and a half like in theater school. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try something else. And so I signed up for circus classes because I had always loved it. And it was always so beautiful to me. And I wanted to be one of those girls who could like climb the silks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I love the feeling of weightlessness. Like I'm just love feeling like I'm floating. And so I signed up for classes and I did it for like 2 years. I went to school and I trained and I worked really hard and I got new muscles in just places and lots of bruises and burns. And then one day I was like, this just really hurts a lot. And so I went back to bartending, but I wanted to find some way to integrate the two of them. And that's, I met the former Pernod rep, who's now one of my very best friends. And we started talking about doing an event together. And
is that Leslie?
That's Leslie.
Leslie Paraso. She's been on the show too.
Oh, fantastic. Yes. Yeah. So that kind of brainstorming about an event that we could do that would put circus and absinthe together because they kind of seem like a good fit.
Yeah, totally.
That led to a really fun Bastille Day party. And then she left the job to go work as a full-time as a writer and I took her job.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So did you, when you got out of circus school, you started bartending again, did you like have just all kinds of crazy flair?
Oh my God. Okay. So I used to practice. I'm really bad at it. So the thing is like, as we've learned, like maybe I shouldn't, it's good that I'm in the profession I'm in now because everything else didn't work out. So I was really bad. I can't juggle. I'm not a very good clown.
just take notes from
I'll from never me. Be a contortionist. My teacher used to go, you'll never be a contortionist.
That's so shitty.
I was like, I'm 25. I think the jig is up. That's it.
That's awesome. Yeah. I always love hearing, every time we have someone on the show, I like getting the backstory on the people who are doing these awesome jobs, you know, like a very coveted job, like being the brand ambassador for an awesome absinthe company for Pernod and Ricard. You know, it's like there's always like a path to getting to for, you know, people who are writers in the industry or distillers or brewers or bar owners, bartenders. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always funny to it's fun sometimes to like get the background story on them. And it really tells you a lot about like.
And it's not linear. Like, people ask me, like, how did you get your job? I want to do what you do. And I say, do what you love. Do what you love and be 100% who you are. And if someone wants you, they will come find you. And it's exactly what happened to me. And I see people trying so hard to, like, fit into something. And I was like, I said, just live your life. And if your life is the same life that your brand wants, they'll ask you to come work with them.
Yeah. I feel like I've broken record on this show a lot of times because I always... You know, every week I learn so much more, so many more new things about different spirits and bar history and cocktails. And, you know, it's just as educational for me as it is for our listeners, you know. And I would say that, and like I said, I feel like I broke record, that it's such an exciting time for this industry. And especially because, you know, I'm not talking shit on any of like the big distributors or like the corporate guys in the conference rooms, but you know, it's great now that we have so many personalities and people who are so passionate about the actual art and craft of the industry and what it means, rather than, you know, just dollar signs on some paper in an office, you know.
And that's why I love my company. I always say I work for a very, very small craft brand that has a big rich dad, you know, that like we have this huge parent company that's incredibly successful. But I think one of the huge reasons I love our company and the reason we're so successful is we've really prioritized bartenders and we've really prioritized trade, like from Absolut and all the work we do with them in creating, you know, Elixir and all the new, you know, interesting flavors we were doing to Plymouth and Beefeater being so bartender friendly. It's one of the reasons I'm so proud to work at Pernod Ricard.
Cool. Well, I'm so proud to have you in the studio finally.
Thank you so much.
This has been great. Thanks so much for bringing me absinthe in the afternoon.
My pleasure.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna remember this for a very long time. This is what makes me happy, drinking absinthe in the afternoon. And that actually, on that note, that's one of the greatest, simplest cocktails too. The Hemingway cocktail, Death in the Afternoon.
The simplest.
Just absinthe and champagne.
Yep. Just a glass of absinthe glass of champagne with a little absinthe on top, and you're good to go.
Death in the Afternoon. All right. Thanks so much again.
Of course. My pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Come back anytime you like.
Well, thank you.
Well, you've been listening to The Speakeasy. This has been Damon Bolte and Anne-Louise Marquis from Pernod Ricard. Check in next week. And till then, have a good week. Cheers. With your rock and roll, Lord, knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you so.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.